see my dream. Every day I see my dream. Every day I see my dream.
You're at the top of Lincoln. On KZUM, your community radio station. Hey there, and welcome to the Top of Lincoln. I'm your host, Tanner Odell, an 18-year-old that is just crazy passionate about cooking and entertaining. Tonight is a very special night because it is my last Top of Lincoln interview. Now, don't you worry, though. Just because it's my last Top of Lincoln interview does not mean I am not sticking around here on KZUM. Next week, I will be back. Same time, same place, 6:30 p.m. every Wednesday night with a brand new concept, basically. As you know, if you listen to my show, I am headed down to Austin, Texas, moving there for culinary school, actually. So the new theme is basically all natural things. The show's going to be called The All Natural. I'll be bringing you all natural music, food, and conversation. So at this culinary school, I'm learning all kinds of vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free kinds of things. So it's going to be a very healthy, friendly, all natural show that you do not want to miss. I hope you all had a fantastic 4th of July last week. I know that I did. And as summer just kind of shows itself more and more, all of these recipe ideas just flood in. I mean, that's what happens when you are just so passionate about cooking, is everything can inspire a recipe. So all of these new foods, new things that I'm testing will be available for you on TannerOdell.com as I test them and make them and tweak them, all that good stuff. You can also find all my blogs, my podcasts, and more information about this up and coming all natural show on TannerOdell.com. So to keep up with me during this crazy move to Austin, you can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, all those good social media outlets. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Pinterest, I'm on Foursquare, I'm on Instagram, basically everything. So let's connect for sure. Facebook.com/ILikeTannerOdell and Twitter.com/TannerOdell. For those other forms of social media, you can just search for my name and I should just pop up right there for you to connect with. Now, the show tonight, dun dun dun, I am so pumped up. I've been eagerly awaiting this interview. It's Chip Connolly. He is joining me via phone to chat about his book, Emotional Equations. I first met and listened to Chip talk at the UCLA Extension National Restaurant Industry Conference, and man, he just connects with the audience in such a personal way, and I know he's going to have an extreme impact on you. So Chip Connolly, I mean, he's a well-known CEO, hotelier, speaker, and author, so he's joining me after this song I'm going to play you while I connect with Chip on the phone. Now, this is a new song by Imagine Dragons. It is called On Top of the World. And man, we're going to be on top of the world as we are speaking and chatting with Mr. Chip Connolly. We'll meet you back here in just a minute, live on KZUM. This is new music on the Top of Lincoln. Imagine Dragons, On Top of the World. Listening to the Top of Lincoln. Welcome back to the show. That song was On Top of the World by Imagine Dragons, and man, am I ever on top of the world with this guy on the phone tonight. I have been waiting to interview Chip ever since I saw him speak at the UCLA Extension National Restaurant Industry Conference. He is a well-known CEO and hotelier, founder of Joie de Vivre, and we'll be talking really just about life, business, and of course his books here on the show tonight. So I would love your help in welcoming Chip Connelly to the program. Thank you so much for calling in.
It's great to be here with you.
Thank you. Now, I am thrilled that we get to talk about emotions tonight because I'm going through a lot of them right now. I'm moving to Austin, Texas for culinary school.
Oh, I love Austin. I'm a huge fan of Austin.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you. Now, I want to start the interview, though, tonight by going kind of to the root of why you do what you do. I mean, you're so passionate, so enthusiastic, and just a great guy. And, you know, where does all of that come from?
Well, I guess the name of my company, Joie de Vivre. Joie de Vivre means joy of life in French. And there are very few companies in the world whose name is also the mission statement of the company, and that's our mission statement has been creating opportunities to celebrate the joy of life. And I guess that comes back to just how I feel, you know, what I feel life is about. Life is not meant to be struggling. It's meant to really find your passion and your purpose in life and throw yourself into it.
Right. Exactly. Now, when you bought your first hotel, what was that process like? I mean, that had to have taken a big toll on you, I mean, emotionally, but obviously you learned so much from it.
Yeah, that first, it was actually not even a hotel, it was a motel. It was
a motel.
A ghetto motel. It was I'm not a hotelier, I'm a motelier. That's how I got started, at least. But, I was 26 years old, and I went out and raised almost $1 million from people who really believed in me more than they believed in the real estate project I was suggesting, because it was a broken down, bankrupt, no-tell motel, paid by the hour motel in a bad neighborhood. And against all odds, it became a very successful rock and roll hotel called the Phoenix. And that's really how my hotel career started.
That's so cool.
Learning how to actually go out and find a niche audience, a collection of people who fall in love with a hotel and tell all their friends. And that's really how it all got going.
That is so awesome.
Since then, we've created over 50 hotels, 50 boutique hotels.
Bam. Amazing. Now, in your TED Talk, by the way, I've got to speak at 2 TEDx events, and I watch TED Talks all the time. I've watched your TED Talk about 3 times now.
Oh, wow.
And so you told the story of Van Quash, one of your employees in the hotel you first purchased. And I want you to talk a little bit about that time you spent with her and the lessons you learned, because I just found that story so inspirational.
Well, so she's a Vietnamese refugee who'd come to the U.S., this is 25 years ago. I bought the motel. I'm 26 years old at the time. I don't know a thing about the hotel business. She was one of the housekeepers, and she had just a really wonderful sort of joie de vivre spirit, a joy of life about how she did her work. And, you know, the process of actually cleaning a guest room and toilets for a living is, you know, can be very dreary and full of drudgery. But what I found from her was that she found joy in creating the sense of community with her other fellow workers, because she was, you know, new to this country and was, she didn't really have a community that to speak of, because she had only come to the U.S. a couple of years earlier.
Right.
But I also saw that she just loved helping our guests feel good. And, you know, when I started to realize that the way she saw the guests was almost how she saw herself. She wanted to treat people well who were traveling far away from home. She was from Vietnam, and she knew what it was like to live in the U.S. far away from home. And so she felt like she empathetically wanted to help our hotel guests feel like they can feel safe and clean and, you know, well cared for when they're traveling on the road.
How cool is that? And, I mean, so she didn't look at it as just a job, which I love so much. I mean, she kind of found that true meaning in life that, you know, she's here to really make people's lives better.
Yeah. That so there's a way we can have one of three relationships with our work. It's either a job, a career, or a calling. And it sort of fits in the form of a pyramid, because about 65% of us think of our work as a job. About 25 to 30% of us think of their work as a career, and only 5 to 10% of us think of it as a calling. So it's a smaller fraction of us. But
wow.
If you create an environment where people feel like they're living their calling, you're creating a great place to work and probably a very successful business model. And so the key question for a leader is, how do you create a calling out of a job for people? And what I've learned along the way, after being 24 years being a CEO of this company I started, is the best way to help people find a calling is to find the purpose and the impact in what they're doing. If they're always just focused on the tasks, if Van Quash, Vivian, we call her Vivian, if she is purely focused on cleaning toilets, it's never going to be anything more than a job. But if she sees her role as to be the person who's helping create tranquility and safety and a friendship with people who are traveling far away from home, that's a much bigger role.
Oh, yes.
And it helps someone feel like they can be more engaged.
That is so cool. And, okay, so I'm thinking about this, but I watched the movie Anger Management yesterday with Adam Sandler and Jack Nicholson. Have you seen that movie?
I have not. No.
Okay, well, in one of the scenes, it just totally spoke to me. It's relating to this right now, but it was when Jack Nicholson's character was asking Adam Sandler's character who he was. And basically, this Adam Sandler's character, he is in an anger management class. And Jack Nicholson, he's kind of the, you know, the teacher. And so he didn't want to know what his job was or what his hobbies were, but he wanted to know who he was as a person. And I think, like, today in life, I mean, we just sit back, we let what we do define who we are. So I think that, you know, let's talk for just a minute about that meaning in life. I mean, I could ask you what the meaning of life is. That's a little cliche. But I truly believe it's different in every person's life. And how do you go about finding that meaning and really connecting with your emotions?
Well, I think so much of it comes down to, sometimes it goes back to being a child and, like, looking back at what was it that actually seemed to light you up as a kid. And, you know, as somehow as we get older, we get in on a narrower path. And so when someone's really sort of lost and feeling a little bit lost in life, sometimes I ask them to go back and, like, what was it that as a kid that really, you know, got you excited? I remember one person said, I loved making, you know, mud pies in the sandbox. And I said, well, do you like cooking? And they said, yeah, I do. I sort of like cooking, too. Do you like cooking pastries? She says, I love cooking cakes and pastries. She says, have you ever thought of going to cooking school? I mean, sounds like, you know, your story a little bit.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I've always thought I could do that, but I just thought it was, like, so, you know, I got an MBA. I can't go back to cooking school and become a chef. And I said, why not?
Exactly.
And she did. That's what she did. She went back and she, you know, and ultimately she's created her own restaurant. So
wow.
Long story short, she's able to use her business career, but also her passion that came from, you know, making mud pies as a kid and focusing on, you know, what it means to be a chef. And now she's in a place where instead of, you know, she may make less money than, you know, working for an investment bank, which is where she was working, but she was not getting fulfilled in that investment banking job. And, you know, over time, one of the things we learn, we get very focused along the way of, you know, how much money do we have, and we have a scarcity in life around money. And the truth is, as you get older, the scarcity in life is not money for most people. For some, it still is. But for most people, the scarcity is time. And when you start to realize that the real scarcity in life is time, you start to value that time a lot more. And you look at things like, if I'm working in a job that actually is not fulfilling me, you know, then you need to actually move on. The question I like to ask people is not what are you getting from your job, but what are you becoming as a result of the work you're doing?
Right.
What is it that you're becoming as a human being?
Wow. And when you ask people that, what's the answer that they give? I mean, do they just, you know, can they say nothing, or do you get answers?
I get answers. Like that. I initially get oh wow, because we have a tendency to think of our work as something that we get something from our work. We do give something to it as well, but we're very focused on the getting. And when you start asking the question of what am I becoming as a result of my work, it's a broader question. It really
yes.
does get down to the question of what's my purpose and impact. And as a human being, knowing that we are like a little sculpture, and how we sculpt and curate our life quite often comes back to how do we spend our time working, and our work sculpts our perspective on life
right.
and our worldview. And so to my mind, you know, you have to look at how your work creates collateral benefits in your life. For me, the idea of creating a company that was creating joy in the world, made me feel good. I've been in a job before that actually was all about adversarial negotiations, and I'd come home at the end of the day and my shoulders and my neck were hard as rocks, and I sort of felt like the world was out to get me. And, you know, that's, you know, for me, I realized that wasn't what I wanted, you know, for my life.
Yeah. Wow. Now, in which ways have, you know, getting to know your emotions helped you? And I mean, in both business and in your personal life, because I'm sure, you know, relationships are stronger and obviously you have more joy in life, but what stands out to you as being kind of the main selling point on getting to know your emotions?
Well, here's the funny thing about our emotions is none of us went to emotion school. I wish they had, you know, they should have emotion school in kindergarten, and they should help teach you, or maybe they should have it in high school and college, and just teach you, like, okay, this is what envy is versus jealousy, and this is what anxiety feels like, and here's how you actually can help yourself get out of anxiety, or here's
right.
the difference between happiness and joy. So I, you know, 4 years ago when I went into a very deep, dark depression, I did my own class, internal sort of PhD on emotions, and learned about them. And for me, what I came to realize is that, you know, of course, one of the few things that we carry with us for a lifetime is our emotions, and yet most of us have this emotional baggage that we don't actually look at our baggage and open it up and say, okay, what's inside here? And so I started doing that a little bit more. And what I found is once I understood the ingredients that created anxiety, and there's really two ingredients. It's what you don't know and what you can't control. So anxiety equals uncertainty times powerlessness. Once you know that, once you understand that what makes anxiety is the level of uncertainty you have and the level of powerlessness you have, I needed to focus on what I do know and what I can influence.
Right.
And then I ended up writing a book about it called Emotional Equations. And
yes.
it became a bestseller, and that's my life.
Perfect. Now let's talk more a little bit about emotional equations, the simple truths for creating happiness and success. So you put math together with our human emotions to basically make things clear to us. And, you know, I want to start talking about this book by you telling the story of August 19th, 2008.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was giving a speech. So first of all, I'd had a rough year. I had one of my closest friends who has the same name I have, Chip. He committed suicide. And I was reading a book, Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, a famous book about, you know, the psychologist in a concentration camp. And my life was just really in a rough place, and I was trying to find the meaning in my life. And I broke my ankle about a month before the date you're talking about, in July, and I ended up getting a bacterial infection in my leg and went on some strong antibiotics. And so I was giving a speech on August 19, 2008 in St. Louis, Missouri, and at the end of my speech, because I had some kind of allergic reaction to the antibiotics or something, I ended up going unconscious, and just as the paramedics arrived, my heart stopped. And over the next 90 minutes, my heart just kept stopping, and I kept having to be revived, and I was in the emergency room for a few hours, and I was in the hospital for a couple of days. But that experience, in tandem with my friend committing suicide, with just a bunch of other things going on in my life that were troublesome, led me to take Man's Search for Meaning, that famous book by Viktor Frankl, and turn it into an equation. Because and why? Because, you know, frankly, I'm not a big fan of math, but math is about relationships. It's the relationship of numbers.
Right.
And I said, well, what maybe math could be about the relationship of emotions. Because what's nice about math is usually an equation sort of is very solution-oriented and very concise. And I needed to take that really poignant, meaningful book and turn it into something that I could make actionable. So the equation was despair equals suffering minus meaning.
Wow.
And I was in the hospital room, you know, recovering, and that's what I came up with. And so suffering, the way the algebra works is the suffering in life, suffering is, you know, when you're going through a really rough time, it's like ever present. It's like fog in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It's something you always know is there. And the problem, and if you're a Buddhist, actually Buddhists know that, you know, suffering is sort of the first noble truth of life in Buddhism. It's always around if you want to look for it.
Right.
So suffering is the constant and meaning is the variable. And once I realized that, and instead of focusing my attention on the constant, I focused on my attention on the thing I could influence and affect, which is meaning. And as the meaning in my life went up, the despair went down. And so how did my meaning go up? It was everything from on a daily basis coming home and saying, what did I learn today? You know, when you're going through a rough time, you are learning how to get through emotional boot camp. And we're all very familiar about what it's like to go back in January to the gym after not having worked out for 6 months. And you learn that you have physical muscles in your body that are painful that you didn't realize you had. Well, that's what happens with our emotional muscles. And I started making a list on a daily basis or on a weekly basis of what emotions I was learning. And I was learning courage and humility and vulnerability and authenticity. And as I started to actually make my list of the emotions I was learning and how they might serve me later in life, I started feeling better. I started feeling like, wow, as bad as this is, I really feel like something good's coming from it. And as a result, I started feeling better, and then I started literally teaching emotions and the specific emotional equation to leaders in my company because I could see a lot of suffering around. And it worked. And people really came, you know, were able to have a sense of what was going on inside of them. Because when we're going through so much external chaos in the world, and that the last 4 years has been a lot of chaos, we look for some kind of internal logic, and the ultimate internal logic is understanding our emotions.
Right. That's fantastic. And how did all of your employees kind of react to all of these emotional equations that you were throwing at them, all this math that you were throwing at them?
Well, initially, most people like started to breathe again.
Well, that's a good thing.
What happens during tough times is people really hold their breath, get anxious, and try to put on a happy face when they're not feeling that. And so the fact that people felt like they could actually be real was a relief. The fact that they could converse about it was a relief. Some people, I think, found it a little bit daunting because, like, feeling like you could actually express your emotions and work. It's not like we don't express our emotions. We do, but we sometimes don't feel like we can do it safely. It was a real enlightening moment for some people. And for others, it took a while. It took a while for them to get to a place where they could feel comfortable with that. But what happened over time is, and especially for men, as men started to understand the logic behind, there's an equation that helps you understand disappointment. There's an equation that helps you understand happiness. Once you understood what are those ingredients, it's like, you know, speaking about cooking earlier, it's like creating a recipe for a great dish.
Yeah.
And once you understood the recipe, you know, you're more likely to cook well.
Exactly. Now, what is one equation that maybe we haven't talked about yet that you have in your book that can just really have power, that can maybe truly change your outlook on life, maybe for happiness, maybe for something like that? One equation you can share with the listeners.
Well, I mean, let's talk about the happiness one for a moment. I went over to Bhutan, a little country between China and India, to try to understand happiness because they're the first country in the world 40 years ago to create a gross national happiness index. Instead of just having a GDP or, you know, gross domestic product index.
That is so awesome. I love that.
It's very interesting. So what I found there is that, what I found in studying some research on happiness is that the fastest way for people to feel happiness, and it's been shown on four continents, if you're unhappy, the fastest way to get happy is to feel gratitude and then express it. And so the equation for happiness is really about wanting what you have, appreciating what you have, practicing gratitude. That's the numerator of the equation. It's a division equation. So you get happiness equals wanting what you have, and then the denominator is having what you want. Now, that sounds a little complicated. So happiness is not about having what you want. It's about wanting what you have. So it's wanting what you have divided by having what you want. The denominator is basically pursuing gratification. So it's happiness equals practicing gratitude divided by pursuing gratification. And that's how most of us live. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a type A person. I go out and pursue things. But what I really learned over time is that when you're constantly in that pursuit mode, you have a tendency not to appreciate what you have. And if you really want happiness, practicing gratitude about what you have is the fastest way to get there. And as opposed to putting yourself constantly on the treadmill, pursuing the things you haven't gotten yet.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's it. It makes so much sense. That's what I love. It just makes so much sense. Now, we only have a few minutes left, and I have a quick question for you. You know, as a resident of the Y generation, I want to know if you believe that all of these equations will stay the same or similar for these generations to come. So, you know, what do you kind of see in the future for emotions in, you know, business and in personal life?
Well, I think that, you know, what's interesting in the business world is as we're having a bit of a feminization of the business world, in the sense that the women have actually handled this recession better than men, not just emotionally, but actually the unemployment rate for women is actually lower than for men. And we see more women growing in management and leadership positions. And women, for a variety of reasons, have more fluency with their emotions than men. It's just true. I'm not saying this to, like, you know, beat up on men. There's just a truism in this, and there's a lot of reasons for it. And so the good news about that is I think what it's going to mean is there's going to be a more collaborative and emotionally aware and emotionally intelligent kind of workplace.
Right.
Daniel Goleman wrote a book called Emotional Intelligence 17 years ago, and he was able to prove that 2/3 of the success of business leaders comes back to their EQ, their emotional intelligence, and only 1/3 has to do with their IQ. So what are the IQ or their level of experience in their work? So I think that, you know, that's good news that we see more women coming into senior levels of leadership.
Oh,
and
yes.
For those of us who have challenges with our emotions and don't understand them, you know, we just have to have the comfort level of knowing, you know, none of us went to emotion school, and, you know, maybe you can go read my book, Emotional Equations, and understand your emotions a little bit better. And by doing so, not only are you going to make yourself a little bit happier, but also you're likely to make yourself a little bit more successful.
Right. Perfect. Best-selling author Chip Conley on the show tonight. You can find Chip's books available where books are sold as well as online. Head on over to chipconley.com and emotionalequations.com for more information. You can also become a fan of Chip's on Facebook and follow him on Twitter. I can't thank you enough for joining me on the show tonight, Chip. You are just a fantastic guy and an amazing role model. So thanks for sharing your passion with us tonight.
Tanner, it's been great. I appreciate it. Thanks for what you're doing, and I look forward to connecting again in the future.
Perfect. Stay on the line for me. We'll chat just a little bit after the show. Thank you all for tuning in to the Top of Lincoln tonight. I'll be back next Wednesday with a bit of a change. All natural, here we come. For more information about me and what is up for the show ahead, head on over to TannerOdell.com. You can also find out all of the Top of Lincoln podcasts. Everything is on KZUM.org and on iTunes. I will see you next week, but until then, remember to go out and live in that moment.